Oh, the horn. No.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play so far.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the country play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, the Tide took a trip to the Show Me State and showed off our brand of football. In the end, 42-10, not much really to talk about, right?
Man, there was a lot to talk about. It was not a good matchup going into the game for Missouri. I mean, they didn't have their starting quarterback. Who's able to be a running quarterback and a throwing quarterback, and then with all the injuries to their offensive line, you know, it was a bad mismatch from the get go.
It really was. I kind of kidded with someone at work that it was almost a head of the forehead slap by Kirby Smart. I have to redo the defensive game plan now with their backup quarterback and the center of their offensive line, literally the center and the two offensive guards out of the game. I think they did some maneuvering a little bit of player and personnel, but with that many people, you think, gosh, that's material to the defensive game plan.
It is, and I know we like to start talking about the offense, but I have to give a shout to AL.com because they spent the whole week with one of their field reporters in Missouri, and he did a lot of interviews with the players and the coaches before the game, and they talked about that loss to Vandy, and they talked about their inability to pick up a particular stunt that caused them trouble with Vandy. And ironically enough, Alabama does the same exact blitz early in the game, and the poor freshman doesn't pick it up again. And I was like, man, didn't y'all – I mean, even the announcers, Danielson was talking about that they had rehearsed that in the walkthroughs on Thursday. And even then, you know, they still didn't pick it up.
Yeah, I heard Danielson make a reference to that, and you know the backup's just not getting the number of reps, and amongst everything else, it really is kind of a fire hose situation, you know, for freshmen and redshirt freshmen and that type of situation coming in with, you know, the number one. It happens to be Alabama, but you know, any time the number one team in the country's coming to your house, there's a little extra pressure, and yeah, we definitely saw that on film, and you know, the first thing that we wanted to do is see if they've got that taken care of.
You know, and also, they did not. And you would think that, you know, it's a blitz right up the middle, right? You would think that would be something they could pick up. But I will say, in listening to Saban after the game, when he was doing his coach's show, I like that he took credit for not having the team ready to come back after that unusual delay. In no surprise fashion, he talked about the coaches were ready for the interruption of play. They knew it was going to happen. They just didn't know when. And they were ready for their adjustments whenever that happened. And so, no surprise, Saban had them prepared. But he said after giving them 10 minutes to dry off and get new shoes or socks or whatever, he said, and after making the adjustments, he said, I just assumed that they were going to come back out with the intensity that, quite frankly, it sounds like prior to that break, that was the way he expects them to be able to play all the time, and they couldn't carry that after the break. It was a little frustrating. You know, if we want to nitpick, it was frustrating that we came back and kind of took our foot off the throat a little bit.
We really did. You know, that break in action, you know, we were a little bit thunderstruck, you know, literally our team. We were on all cylinders. I mean, 21, you know, it was 27-0, I think, literally at that time. And you can try to treat it. It's just like a halftime, guys. It's just like a halftime. We're going to give you the few minutes. Coaches are going to talk, then we're going to come in. But it's not. It's not a halftime. It's a break in the action. You know that there's still another halftime in a few more minutes. And so in that interim, 8-9 minutes of play between when they resumed and then sort of the official halftime, you just think that you're going to go through the motions at that, and then you'll come out at the second half ready to play. And I feel like we came out just going through the motions, and Missouri did not. And then that's, you know, when they racked up that return for a touchdown, I was pretty frustrated, and I think Saban did the right thing and not getting too, you know, fired up at the team and took responsibility. It's kind of a tough situation, but I think human nature, which Saban so coaches against and coaches, you know, talks about, but human nature just kind of took over. And I think our team thought that everyone would just go through the motions in those 8 or 9 minutes.
They did. And it was the perfect time for, you know, it was a perfect storm or perfect time for that break in the action, as Gary Danielson said, because it at least gave Missouri a glimmer of hope. But it was a good game. It was a good performance. I was glad we came back at the end and kind of picked things back up. What was your takeaway at the beginning of, you know, starting with offense? What jumped out at you? I've got a couple particular plays I want to talk about, but what jumped out at you on offense, first of all?
Well, there's a couple of different things. And so as you say that, probably three things spring to mind. One of the things, and I'm going to go on a positive note to start, because I think there's some certainly enough positive there, but there's some things to pick out as well. But I believe that Missouri had not allowed a 100-yard rusher for the season, and we come out of the game with two. And in fact, both of our rushers, Lacey and Yeldon, both set personal bests in terms of their yardage. That's probably, if I were going to encapsulate one thing that I'm really taking away, is that the running game was certainly firing on all cylinders. Now, the rain helped in that regard, that we weren't trying to throw the ball, and certainly having the lead helped as well when we were just taking the air out of the ball for what ended up being most of the second half. But you take all of that, we've still done something that was pretty impressive that's not been done in a number of years. And so two guys set personal bests on the ground. I was pretty impressed with that.
No, that's true. And, you know, this team, Missouri, prior to these injuries, I mean, they've had some good success in the past few years of their program, but, you know, it's not SEC football. And I think they saw that on Saturday. But you know, that run of Eddie Lacy's to start the, you know, that second play from scrimmage where he breaks that long run. And, you know, with us having to be at home, it was great that they went back and showed that in replay and showed, you know, 7 or 8 just really good blocks. You know, Cyrus and DJ Fluker had to get up on the linebackers and make blocks, and they did, and the wide receivers. And, you know, it was your typical, we're going to have everybody blocked except for one guy, and our running back should be able to make him miss. And then, of course, he was able to make that second guy miss and stretch a, you know, what should have been a 15 to 20 yard gain into a 73-yarder. But, you know, to start giving them credit where credit's due at the beginning of this show, that one play, man, I love that. I mean, that was just fundamental football, hat on a hat.
Yeah, it was. And then so on top of all the fundamentally sound, you know, the lineman block and the receivers downfield, the lineman getting to the second level, on top of that, you know, just to kind of put a bow on it, you know, Lacey made some nifty moves in the open field. And that just is further evidence to me that at least coming into the game that he was healthy and, you know, ready to produce.
I think he's heard some of the talk out there in the media, you know, about Yeldon and about his injuries. And, you know, we're not the only ones that talk about him being injury prone. And you know, he's probably still banged up. But I think maybe he realizes that, you know, big time players play through injuries. You know, Barrett Jones has played a lot of football at Alabama when he's been hurt.
Sure.
Along with other players. And do I think he's 100% healthy? No, I think he's probably 80% healthy. But I think that he's out there, you know, playing through injuries, and I think that's a big step for him.
Well, that's a mental toughness, and, you know, we start to see some of the principles that Saban works into his speeches and his presentations, and you know, if we're hearing it on the outside, you know, the players are hearing it so much more. And so when you have a player, you know, like a Lacey, a lot of talent, kind of banged up, but capable of still going out on the field, he sucks it up, and he certainly presents as fully healthy.
He does. What did you think of the what did you think the play? I guess one play that I want to touch a couple things real quick is, first of all, the play to Kenny Bell. I just love the call when we were starting at the 50-yard line after scoring that first score. I just really love the very first play. We take a shot down the field, which you know I love, and you know, you talked about Kenny Bell being a one-trick pony, and to sit there and use his speed and watch him. I mean, he just ran right by that cornerback that didn't even bump him in that 5-yard space. It's a shame he couldn't stay on his feet for the touchdown, but I love that call. That was just put him where he can succeed. And that was just a great call to Kenny Bell.
No, it really was. And I kind of knew that that would be one of the plays that you want to talk about. And it's certainly worthy of conversation. You know, we've already busted at that point. We've already busted the long Lacy run. We've already demonstrated that, you know, not only, you know, as advertised, we can move the ball on the ground, and we will. And so we run that play off of flea flicker action. And as soon as he pitched it back, I just had visions of the Auburn game last year. I knew that it was going to be Kenny Bell streaking down the middle of the field, and that's where the ball was going. Sure enough, you know, he didn't keep his feet, but he went 44 yards for a big gain. And so right after, you know, we literally line up hat on hat, run the ball down your throat for 70 yards for a touchdown, we're going to flea flicker you into a 44-yard passing game. That becomes demoralizing very quickly.
It does. What are you surprised we pull the, you know, because you're only going to see that once, maybe twice a season. Are you surprised that they, I mean, I like taking a shot at the 50, but are you surprised we pulled the flea flicker out of our bag of tricks against this opponent at this point in the season?
No, I'm not. If you know, you could say, oh, why wouldn't we save that for the Auburn game, or why wouldn't we save that? We're not going to get away with a play like that against Auburn probably a second time. Maybe this year they're pretty poor, but you know, you kind of see they're going to expect something like that. We're not going to get away with a play like that against an LSU. We're going to get away with a play like that when it's not expected. Missouri wasn't expecting something like that.
No, that's fair. That's fair. What did you think early in the game when we were kind of running the ball at will, as you said there, and we had a particular play where TJ Yeldon had been getting some good success when he came in to spell Lacy, and then Lacy comes back in and rushes a ball, and I think we were up. I want to say we were up 14-0 at this point, or maybe 21-0. And we had a second and four. And we obviously do the looking to the sideline that I can't stand, which thank goodness we don't do very often. But we audible late at the sideline's discretion. And we audible to a play where we throw to Christian Jones in the flats. And it was that play that we scored on, you know, earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. And we get a lot. We lose 4 or 5 yards. Yep. Because yep. The wide receiver doesn't make his block. And
yep.
I'm just surprised by that call. You're driving, you're in the red zone again, you're running the ball as much as you want to. I don't like that play call at that particular juncture.
No, I don't like that play either. And I wish, you know, I wish they'd, whatever you had played, I wish they had run that. But as I was watching that, and it took me a minute to kind of get exactly where we were, but I remember that precisely when we did the late audible at the line of scrimmage, I said to the TV, we're going down the field. We're going down the field. I thought that they saw something in coverage and that they were going to take advantage of a one-on-one on a corner or something like that. And what a letdown when we just throw it to, you know, nothing against Jones, but we'll just throw it to him in the flat and lose yards. Oh, that was just a letdown. Run it up the middle.
It was. And to get my facts straight, we were up 7-0 at that. We were up 7-0 at that point. So this is before the big Kenny Bell play. And
yep.
And it was 2nd and 6 at the 30-yard line. And so we lose 3 yards, and then we come back on 3rd and 9 and you know, get a holding call and don't complete the, you know, the play. And so then what do we do at the 35-yard line? Because now we're not in field goal range because Missouri, you know, takes the holding penalty. You know, Cody Mundell punts 22 yards from their 35 and they get the ball at the 13. And it was like, well, boy, that whole sequence just sucked.
It really did. And it's hard to know, you know, in fairness, we only see half the cards because we don't know what the play call was. And there could very well have been the mentality, like you said, that was before the Kenny Bell, that we're going to keep everything. All of our plays are going to be close to the line of scrimmage. Now, Lacy's long touchdown run, but it was a run. And so that's a close to the line of scrimmage play because it's a run. And so we could say we're playing close to the line of scrimmage because we know that we're going to throw over their head here in just a minute. And so that's a kind of a grasp at straws. We don't know what they had play called. And you think even if you're going to do something, you know, you're never going to call a play for negative yards. So
it was just surprising real quick
on that one. Other than that was just a good defensive series by the Tigers.
It was. It was just they had a 4-man front. We had seven guys. We had six guys at the line of scrimmage, one tight end. And it was like, man, you've been running the ball at will. And so that was definitely frustrating for me. One other thing I want to touch on, though, on a positive real quick, so I'm not always being a naysayer, is I think the offensive line has showed to me again, has shown to me that they are really good at running, at the running game. I'm still very concerned about Cyrus and DJ in the passing game. More so DJ than even Cyrus, but both of them are very susceptible to the speed rushers on the edge. I think AJ's, you know, not to jump on AJ's injury real quick yet, but that was due in large part to making mistakes in the pass protection. But on the running plays, what really stood out at me was the number of linemen that were pulling. If I'm a defensive coordinator and I'm watching this tape, and I see Barrett Jones and DJ Fluker pull to the right side, and then I see Anthony Steen and Cyrus pull to the left side, and then I see Chance Warmack and Steen pull another play on a trap play. I mean, all five of those guys had a play where they were pulling, and I don't remember ever seeing that. And so when you sit there and tell me I've got five offensive linemen that can be involved like that in the running game, man, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, that's a good point, because rarely do you see a team that has that many linemen that can pull, that can and can be effective at it. Normally, you know, to your point, it's one or two, but we can go left to right, everyone capable of pulling. That's pretty impressive. Now, what we might start to see, especially now you talk about saving some trick plays, what we might start to see is some counteraction off of those pulls. Against maybe an LSU or something, we run a naked. You know, we pull a couple of the linemen, run a naked to the tight end the other way. We might start to see some of those types of developments against some of our upcoming opponents.
Well, hey, let's go ahead and get this TJ Yeldon thing out of the way. This should have been my first offensive comment. So TJ, I'm sorry, sir. You don't know me from Adam, but I'm still sorry. Where he stretched that ball out from the 4.5 yard line when he was getting pushed out of bounds.
Yes.
In the freaking sopping rain. Are you kidding me? Man, that was impressive.
Yeah, that was literally a Superman, you know, maneuver. He was parallel to the ground.
If I'm the other team, I just say, uncle, I give up. That's
sure,
it. We're done.
Sure. And then he just had the wherewithal to position the ball back in the left hand, because the rules have changed. You have to get the ball inside the pylon. It's not, you know, kind of assumed or, you know, kind of around the world invisible line anymore. It's within the pylon in the play of field. And so he got the ball inside the pylon. And so that was certainly an incredible play. And when and it's funny that you said, you know, at that point, you know, cry uncle. It's almost like that's what we did, because right after that play, that was when the thunder strike, and that's where we went to half, or, you know, sort of the pre-half, the rain timeout, and then we came out sort of lethargic. So it's almost like we called uncle on ourselves.
No, that's true. Hey, I noticed, let's talk about AJ for a quick second.
Kudos. Yeah, did we bury the lead on this one?
we probably did. Kudos to him for coming back out. I'm very frustrated at DJ on this play, because you know, this is offensive line 101. I mean, you always worry about your inside shoulder before your outside shoulder. And it kind of reminded me of the whole Steen debacle in the Auburn game a couple of years ago. You know, you can't let your inside shoulder, you know, be exposed like that. And the tackles are so concerned right now about getting beat on the edges from these smaller, quicker defensive ends, that when the ball is snapped, they take two or three steps out automatically. It's like, I got to get a head start because I keep getting beat out here. And so if I'm scheming against Alabama, man, I'd be running stunts inside those two tackles all ball game.
Well, you know, you talk about inside shoulder, outside shoulder, the lineman has to, you know what? And I don't disagree with any of that. Put away the technical talk. When you're a lineman and you see their best defensive lineman head up on you, just go ahead and block him.
Just say he's going to be my guy. I don't care what coach told me to do. He's my guy this play.
Maybe he's the one I ought to get.
Well, and then for AJ, you know, and it's in the moment. It's easy for us to say, I'm sitting on my couch having a drink watching the ball game. But, you know, in those conditions, AJ, you don't need to try to spin away. Your footing is already going to be bad. And when you looked at the replay, I think part of the reason he had this injury was because his one good foot slipped out from under him.
Yep.
And and I guess I can't beat up on him because all year he's been good about just going down easy or getting the ball away. But in that example, he tried to do too much.
Well, Sheldon Richardson's he is a very good lineman, and he came in untouched in a hurry. McCarron tried to spin out. I hear your point. I'm not going to get on him too much about that. I have never, this season, what is this season? I have never been literally on the edge of my seat as I was when he went out, and then waiting to see if he was going to come back in. And so there was a part of me that said, okay, I'm glad he's okay enough to come back in. Now go sit down.
Now, wait a minute. Let's finish this, because I was more on the edge of my seat when the camera shows Blake Sims warming up, because we've talked about this whole second quarterback and who is it. And when the cameraman shows him throwing the ball, because I'm sorry, I'm not confident in his ability to run the offense. I mean, the zone read is all well and good and cutesy. But when I saw that, I was like, oh no, because I'm sorry. I had a pit in my stomach when I saw who was warming up.
Well, and I want to go a couple of different ways on this one, right? It's a 3-score ball game at that point. But you see him hobbling around. He's not fully at strength.
And then he scrambles.
Now, when he scrambles, it's one of those things, okay, I'm glad to see that. Now go sit down. Okay, now I'm glad that you can run another play. Go sit down, because we've proved that we've all come to the firm realization. We've said it maybe, but now we've seen it. If he goes out, we're in trouble. And so if he is, let's go sit down. Let's put some ice on that thing. Let's just do whatever we need to do, and you take the rest of the day off. And I kept rooting for us to score that next touchdown or even, field goal, because that would make it a 4-score game. And I knew at that point we would make the change. But we had to go through a couple of possessions to get that 4th score. And then to your point about Blake Sims, I thought – well, now we're definitively going to know who the backup is. But because McCarron came back in and played some more, I don't know if we can definitively say who the number two is, because as soon as Sims ran down the field, he came out and Eli came in and handed off for the touchdown. So I don't know if we can still definitively say who the number two quarterback is.
Yeah, that late series was very weird. How they handled that was very weird. Hey, what did you – are you surprised that in the conditions, and I know it wasn't the margin of victory the lead that Saban would be comfortable to pull out AJ, but Missouri had really not shown that they were going to do anything with their backup quarterback besides a couple plays. Are you surprised AJ played that long? Because even though they didn't get that score as quick as you would like, I'm surprised he played as long as he did.
Yeah, I thought
they didn't know it was a bruise at that point.
They
had no idea.
Yeah, I am very surprised. There's a part of me that's surprised that he went back in. I show my age a little bit, but remember Saran Stacy went out, was hurt, thought he was okay, went back in and just collapsed in the backfield, back in Stallings' first year. And then, of course, he was lost for the season. It's one of those things, we think he's okay, but all we're doing is evaluating on the sideline with a hair dryer and you know, a rolling board or whatever they were using with him. It seemed very odd what they were doing, but they put a brace on and then they put him back in. Yeah. Put him back in, let him run a couple plays and then get him out of there. And if we can't, you know, we want to get the fourth score, you make it a four score game. We can't, let's go sit him down. You know, let's call it a day. They're not going to come back and beat us with this margin. But yeah, he came in and played longer than I expected him to.
Hey, on the fumble by Eddie Lacy, you know, he had a good day, but you know, that's the football 101. I mean, when you go back and watch the replay, I mean, his forward momentum was stopped and he's sitting there trying to reach the ball out. And at this point, he's got two or three guys around him. I mean, I was sitting there watching the TV saying, he's about to fumble. Yep. He's about to fumble.
Yeah. And he bruised his hand in the game. And at one point, you know, went back to the locker room. And so, you know, you think, well, a bruised hand, he's going to be all right. But he's already a little bit prone to fumbling. And so now you think he has a bruised hand on top of that. You know, I don't want to get too negative on the team, but it's little things like that that start to chip away at my, you know, top shelf confidence. Is there something like that of a concern to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was just I would just say it was just fundamental. I mean, I don't know if it's just him trying to do too much at that point because he does feel better. And, you know, he was very pumped after that big run as he should be. And
sure.
I don't know if it's just I'm feeling that my adrenaline's flowing and I'm going to show that I can, you know, get those tough yards. But between that and the McCarron fumble, which I don't blame McCarron for. I blame Fluker on that one as well.
Yep.
You know, it's just those turnovers were frustrating because, hell, you were already up 21-0 at that point, and you talk about it being 28-0 when the Lightning came. Hell, man, it could have been 42-0 at that
sure.
point.
Sure. That fumble by McCarron, just to point it out, is the first possession inside the red zone that we did not score points.
Yeah, that's a good stat to have.
We're like 24 of 25 or 25 of 20, so whatever the exact number is, an insane amount of possessions inside the red zone. We're like 85% touchdowns, which is phenomenal. This is something we've talked about in seasons past. And then we kind of it's I don't know, ironic is that the way to go with it, but the only possession so far that we don't score is something that we fumble the ball away.
No, that is impressive.
We stop ourselves. We're not stopped by the opponent.
Hey, real quick on the just a teaser for special teams in a minute. I was really unhappy with Christian Jones in this ball game. I'll talk more about it on special teams, but I don't know if you caught this, but it'd be easier to confirm this in the stands. But thank goodness I wasn't there getting my butt soaked. But I think with all his special teams poor decisions, somewhere around the middle of that ball game, he came out and Cyrus Jones came in his place and Christian Jones didn't come back in that game.
Well, he sprained an ankle, so he was out injured.
Well, now see, I hate he sprained an ankle. I was hoping it was for other reasons.
No, it was not performance related. He sprained an ankle, and so he was injured. Think he's going to be okay. But yeah, I took note when we brought in the freshman to field punts and was curious about that, and then, you know, learned a little bit later about the ankle. I want to spend a minute on special teams, but why don't we hit defense first? What stood out to you, or did you have something else on offense?
No, I don't, man. I'm fine with jumping to defense. I was the first thing that just a sequence of plays that I want to touch on is obviously, let me just start by just giving the defense their dues though. I mean, it was just an overall a very good performance. I mean, when, you know, not to read through a bunch of stats here, but you know, the only stat I'll read is, you know, net yard rushing 3 yards. I mean, that kind of says
isn't that
it all.
Almost funny when you say that, you think that's just funny.
I just got to read two lines here, 28 rushing attempts and net yards rushing 3.
Yeah.
I mean, that really says a lot. And just a really good game. I mean, there were some lapses, you know, and this is just being critical, you know, because your team is playing so well that you got to find something. But when you hold a team to 130 yards of total offense and you're doing very well, and we played a lot of guys early. We got the second guys in there a lot. we, you know, the freshman quarterback decided to test our secondary. And, you know, I think our cornerbacks were up for the test.
Yeah, we picked a couple of balls, almost had another one. Blue almost had one. I want to point out just a one-man wrecking crew on defense. And Tommy, this is a guy we've been talking about since his freshman season. You know, he showed flashes to us as a freshman. You know, now everyone's all over him. But, you know, this is a guy that we've been calling out for, you know, 3 years now. But Mosley was just unstoppable. I mean, he had 12 tackles, which was a fourth of the team total. He had a sack. He had a fumble recovery. He had a quarterback hurry. The fumble recovery was on a drive where Missouri was about to put points on the board, and so he cradled that ball and prevented that. He was SEC Defensive Player of the Week. He's just a one-man wrecking crew, right?
He is, man. And if you look at the, you know, just a, you know, not only did he have a good day, you know, with those phenomenal numbers, but, you know, if you think about the number of games that we have been up and been able to play the twos and threes and pulled the starters as early as we have, he has got 51 tackles on the year. Nico Johnson and Trey DePriest have 50 tackles combined. Yeah. So he has more tackles than the two of them combined 6 games into a season when he hasn't played as many snaps as he did this time last year.
Right. And you said something there, and I want to call this out too. And if I'm giving ourselves a pat on the back, then I'll just strain my shoulder doing it. But you said something there about, you know, the rotation and getting the young guys in early. And I'll go back to the preseason interview I did with the Michigan podcast team, and they talked about us replacing 9 starters on defense, and they thought that represented an opportunity for Michigan, and most teams would have thought that. But if you look at who the lineup was, who the starters were, they were all guys that had been in the rotation. They were all guys who had played, and the lone exception was one junior college cornerback. And so it wasn't even a freshman. It was some guy that, you know, it was Blue, who was very talented and has acquitted himself quite well, but he was a JUCO coming in and earning a starting spot. And so when we see these young guys come in and rotate, those are the stars that are going to replace the stars. They're going to be the frontline guys, you know, next year and the year after that. They're going to be the guys that, you know, how do we replace a Hightower and Upshaw? It's with these guys that you're watching play.
Oh, it is. And, you know, we've said this on a podcast before, but, you know, it goes back to what Gary Danielson said last year. Yep. when he would come to a practice, you know, he was sitting there telling people in an interview, he said, well, you just wait. He said, I've seen all the guys that you've never heard of. He said, you just wait and see. And I mean, when you look at a DJ Pettaway and you look at a Duvall and you look at a Fanning, you're looking at the guys of the future, which is why, you know, those are your studs 4 years from now, 3 years from now.
Yep. Yep.
And they're phenomenal in their own right. Hey, what about Blue? I'm glad he was out there, and I'm glad he was able to play through, you know, his injury,
mm-hmm.
but, he was definitely not, you could definitely tell both he and Brandon Ivory, I noticed a noticeable limp on both of their parts. And, so much so that I guess I was kind of surprised that both of them were out there. I mean, more so Ivory than Blue, but, I guess I wish Blue would have came out sooner because he had a good game. But his thing is speed, and I just don't think his speed was there.
No, you know, I'm glad that he was out there. I was, like you said, I was a little more surprised at Ivory, and especially seeing him so early in the ball game. I haven't looked at you know, play counts by the players, but it seemed like Quentin Dial was getting some run at the nose, and so maybe we realized Brandon shouldn't be out there, and so we took him out. Blue, I was thinking Blue had a shoulder, and so that, you know, maybe that would not directly impact his speed. He seemed to play well. He's not a physical. He doesn't strike me as a physical corner, not like a Milliner.
Yeah, he's so, never going to be, probably.
Yeah, and so if he's out there batting down balls or you know, in coverage, I'm generally okay with that. I think it could be, we're this far into the season, every time you roll out of bed, you're as healthy as you're going to be, you know, moving forward. It could be that type of situation. And if he can run out there and play and provide some coverage, and not to get ahead looking next week, but we're going to need him out there.
No, that's fair. I did notice early in the game, when Missouri had the ball, that Duvall was in there very early for Stinson, yep. Way earlier than normal. Who knows if Stinson had an equipment malfunction or something, but it was, he was out there for one play. And this was early, you know, this is literally, I guess, Missouri's second drive. And so he's in there on the first and 10 at the Missouri 13, and he just collapses and doesn't hold containment. And their running back runs opposite, you know, turns, changes direction and rushes for 22 yards, first down Missouri. Mm-hmm. He was out that play.
Yep.
And Stinson was back in the ball game. And so I'm thinking, maybe they just wanted to give him a shot and, okay, you're still third and fourth quarter guy right now.
Yep. You're not quite ready. Can I get you to say something nice about Vinny?
His interception was speaks for itself. I think, you know, he doesn't have, you know, I'm never going to be impressed with his physical makeup as it relates to the position that he's playing, but the pick that he made, I think 8 out of 10 guys did not make that interception. Maybe right. 9 out of 10.
Hey, I'm going to, okay.
Hold on. Let me finish. For him to be able to control his body like he did and be able to cradle that ball like he did, just shows the fundamental soundness of Vinny. I will never question his fundamental soundness.
Can we call Vinny a bizarro world Jarrell Harris? He is not nearly, you know, we used to talk about Jarrell Harris. If they were running obstacle courses, he'd win every time. But on the football field, he gets lost. And Vinny is not, I would say, nearly as athletic as Jarrell Harris, but he knows where to be and how to be there and how to get things done while he's there.
He does. And
he doesn't have a metric. He has no metrics. Jarrell Harris was all metrics. He was the underwear Olympics guy. Vinny's not, but put him on the football field and he'll make you a play.
He will. And he has found a home in the slot coverage where we're playing a zone behind him. And so it looks like we're playing man, but he's really not playing man because he's going to collapse and go after the quarterback most of the time. And when he's in that package, he's got, who knows what his shuttle speed is, but his 10-yard shuttle time must be very good because is he going to beat these other guys in the 40? Hell no. But in the 10-yard, he'd be quick as a cat because when he's over there on the slot and he's looking like press man and then he comes in and times it really well as far as getting by that tackle, man, I'm sure Milner loves having him in that situation because then Milner doesn't have to do it.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to press my luck anymore, but you heard it here first, folks. Tommy saying nice things about Vinny.
Yeah. Okay. What else jumps out at you on defense?
I like the way Adrian Hubbard played. He really
continues to develop, doesn't he?
He does continue to develop, and he got after the quarterback a couple of times, and he set the edge a couple of times. You go to a lot of message boards, and there's just mouth breathers out there, and you don't know who really knows what they're talking about and who doesn't, and you pretty quickly find out most of them don't. But I just saw a random person post that just about Hubbard and setting the edge, and he seems to be really good at setting the edge. And that is something, that's a phrase, that's an expression that we've used for a couple of years now in describing certain players. And he does that very, very well, but he has a more athletic upside than a Brandon Diedrich in terms of not just can I set the edge, but then I can pursue, then I can go make a play. And so he seems very fundamentally sound with some athletic upside. I like me some Adrian Hubbard.
Oh man, he's going to be a nightmare once he continues to add another 15, 20 pounds to his upper body.
Well, yeah, it's like when he fills out. He's still still so young. It's like he still has a maturing, developing body. And at 6'7", you know, numerically, it's a big number, but at 6'7", his weight's, you know, he kind of looks thin. And so when he gets another year in the weight room and at the training table and his body starts to fill out, he's going to be a terror. He's going to grow into maybe, you know, like an Eric Curry kind of guy.
Yeah, he's going to grow into a defensive end. He's not going to be a linebacker for long. But with those long arms and with his tall frame, you know, for him to have a sack, forced fumble, two tackles for loss. I mean, what I really loved is on that key play, you know, where Missouri does have great field position and I'm afraid they're going to sit there and get a fumble. When he goes in and causes that fumble that CJ picks up, you know, there's not enough guys. So many guys hit up high nowadays, and it just frustrates the fire out of me. And when you have a clean shot at the quarterback, I mean, let's face it, this is a barbaric game. And if you're too cutesy, then just don't watch it. Go watch figure skating. When you have a chance at quarterback on the blind side and there is nobody there, you need to put your helmet in his rib cage, in the lower middle back there, and you need to drive through him. And that's where he put his helmet. And I loved that, because so many guys don't take that opportunity when they have it.
What did you think about, speaking of a barbaric game, it's a pretty good setup. What did you think about LaMichael Fanning and his WWE move?
Man, he seems like he's got some anger management issues he seems like he's just pent up. I mean, he just seems like he is just a rocket waiting to take off. And I don't know if it's just he's just not getting to play as much. And so when he is out there, but he's another guy that, you know, if I had to pick a guy who like a Hubbard, who I think has a lot of upside, as high as I am on these other guys, I think you watch Fanning in a couple of years. I think Fanning's going to be a beast.
Yeah, I think
he's got those long arms and that tall frame. Man, he's going to be something too.
I think he was just frustrated, and so he had a chance to make a play. What he did, I'm not supporting what he did. I don't think there's room for that in football. And condone that type of body slam. He had the guy wrapped up. He could have gone to taking him down. But that running back, that was a running back, and he had him wrapped up. He looked like a giant. I mean, holding that running back, he looked like a giant. He looked like holding somebody's kid or something.
He is a giant.
I was really impressed at just, geez, he's big.
He is. What did you think about, I just loved there late in the game, the sequence where you had him in there and Duvall and Pettaway. And you might have had Stinson or Hubbard in there with them. No, you know what? I think you had the freshman in there with them. And so I think you had Darren Lake in there at that point with the three of them. And just, those Missouri guys had to be say, son of a bitch. And y'all are the third string?
Yeah, you guys are the backups. The backups to the backups? Yeah. Yeah, Pagan jumped in and made a big play. And he's a big old boy that's not part of the first team, and just impressive. And it goes back to, you know, like we said, you know, earlier in the preseason, that it becomes psychological warfare, because there's so many big guys, and the younger guys are in some instances bigger. They're just not as experienced. And you think, God, when does it? Where's the scrawny guys at the end of the bench? There's not any around here.
Yeah, we don't have any of those on our team.
No.
Anything else on defense before we jump to special teams?
Well, let's hit up the game balls. What do you got? Offense, defense, game balls.
You know, on offense, it's kind of hard just because you really don't want to have a headliner, but I'm going to do it anyway because I can, and I'm going to give it to AJ, and it's just simply because of him coming back in. when his team needed him. And, you know, the camera zooms in on Saban in the huddle saying, "You all right?" He's like, "Yep, I'm ready to go." Now, whether he was or not, he knew his team needed him because he knew the million Dave Osmonds were gasping at the TV screen saying, "Oh, hell."
Yep.
And, you know, no one else. Lacey and Yeldon are headline guys at this point too, I guess is what I'm saying.
Sure.
They had a hell of a ball game. And so I'm giving it to AJ.
No, for him, for his willingness, I see what you're saying. You're kind of microcosming that into his willingness to go back in and the leadership that that demonstrates. And so I think that's a fair pick. I am going to, for the benefit of the aspiring, you know, screenwriters out there, I'm going to use my mini game ball as a MacGuffin. And I am going to choose, Kenyon Drake. And I'm picking him largely because I want to say, and I've been holding this back for a couple of games.
Drum roll, please. This is going to be big.
He reminds me of the way that he runs of a Sean Alexander. The way
really?
He just, the way that he just glides with the ball, and just seems to run almost on top of the grass. He just kind of glides and finds his way. And then, you know, like water running downhill almost, he just bounces to the outside and he just runs and scores a touchdown. He just seems to run almost effortlessly. And it just kind of just a little bit reminds me of Sean Alexander. So, I'm not saying he's going to be that talented. We'll just, you know, time will tell. But I just see a little bit of a similarity there. And, you know, we had a lot of stars on offense. And so I just, you know, trying to look for someone that was that a depth player or a smaller contributing player that really stood out to me. He continues to impress me with the way that he, you know, carries the ball and carries himself.
All right. So give me your defensive guy so you won't steal mine.
I'm going to go Hubbard for the reasons that we've talked about. I won't, you know, necessarily dive into all of it again, but he just is developing. He's going to grow into a beast, but he's already a contributor. I like the way that he plays for us, and he made some plays for us on Saturday. So I'm giving my mini game ball to Adrian Hubbard.
All right, I'm going to give mine to the big, ugly Jesse Williams. I know that's not what you thought I was going to say, but Jesse Williams' stat line was no solos, one assist. So the non-football fans look at that and be like, man, that guy must suck. He only had one tackle in the ball game. But as you and I saw, the cameraman kept showing time after time where he took the double teams, pushed them 4 yards in the backfield, maybe not quite like a Terrence Cody did, but his ability to hold his ground in the middle of that, disrupt the pocket like he does, you know, just I have to give it to the big ugly. He's not going to get the sacks and get the big glamour. But, buddy, on NFL Sunday, he's going to get drafted because he can do what a lot of people can't do.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I like what Danielson said, about him in terms of, you know, he's a big nose guard and he takes up a couple blockers, but he doesn't lose his feet. He doesn't go to the ground and just create a pile. He still continues to pursue towards, and so he's got a double team, and he's so strong and so fierce that he's moving the double team towards, you know, it's almost like a moving roadblock is what he's creating. And then, you know, we spent some time on this before. Don't have to spend any time, you know, necessarily now, but I just want to call out, you know, he was at the fullback again. So we noticed him there. That's becoming sort of a regular, apparent thing, you know, in a goal line or short yardage situation that he's going to be the go-to guy there. So his versatility, not only to just be a road grader at the nose guard position, but then we can flip him over and he's athletic enough to play some fullback for us. You got to love a guy like that.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, what jumped out at you on special teams? There was a couple obvious. Let's start with the fun stuff. Why don't we start with the good stuff and let's just talk about Landon Collins. Welcome to Alabama football. You've made a couple plays, but you're a five-star that must understand fundamental football. And so for you to come in and take your right hand and put it down almost like you're touching the shoe laces on his shoe to ensure that you can block that punt.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of like that sack by Hubbard. Man, I just love to see that. So many guys would have missed that block.
No, that was phenomenal. That was absolutely, I don't want to understate this. Landon Collins, you were phenomenal on that play. Now, take your gold star and sit down, because the rest of the special teams, you sucked.
Yes.
Horrible.
Yes.
And I'll let you go first, and then I will tell you what made me the most angry about special teams. But what did you see on special teams that really frustrated you?
Well, I wish you wouldn't have told me Christian Jones had a sprained ankle, because his ass needs to sit down on special teams. I am surprised. Granted, I'm glad you made some plays, and I'm glad you made a play in the national championship game, and God bless you. I'm glad you came in when Mays went down, but either you're not understanding things in practice, or you're just reading your own press clippings, or the fact that they're the number one team, because, buddy, you need to get off your high horse. You do not take an over-the-shoulder at the five-yard line on a punt that you could have fumbled in the pouring rain. You do not take another situation where you are catching, I guess he caught two punts inside the 10-yard line. Yep. You do not take a kickoff return in the back of the end zone and return it just because you want to,
right,
and you only get to the 14 or 15. He was horrible.
Yeah, those were very frustrating plays. If you're in the end zone, they're giving you 25 yards. You know, don't run it out. And what I'll tell you what's aggravating to me, and this is not Jones, this is just stat keeping in football. They'll give you the ball on the 25 if you'll take a knee. But when he runs it to the 14, he gets 14 yards on his stat sheet. You should not get a yard credited to your stat sheet until you cross the 25.
I agree with that.
That's just my thing. But I tell you, they teach you in high school, you know your feet to the 10, and if the ball's over your head, let it go. And he a couple times did not, and so that was frustrating. I think we saw we're missing Dee Hart on special teams, because it's my understanding that it was his replacement, freshman Tyler Hayes, that was out of his lane that allowed the kickoff return for a touchdown. And so that's kind of one of those subtle things with Dee Hart's special teams and in the depth, we won't really miss him, but we missed him. It cost us seven.
Now, hold on real quick. Let me jump back on Christian Jones for a second, because I almost forgot something. Not only did he screw up the punt returns and the kickoff returns, but he screwed up that play as well. Because, yes, Tyler Hayes did not stay in his lane, but guess who was the safety man on that play? Christian Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And all he had to do was hang back,
yep,
and he could have easily tackled the guy.
Yep.
What does he do? He runs into Cade Foster, who we know was a linebacker in high school and probably could have made the tackle.
Yep.
But he ran into him.
Yep.
It's like, you moron. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's a little harsh, but I philosophically get what you're saying. I was a little disappointed with our punt average. I might be willing to say, look, wet ball situation, but 32 yards, that's averaging 32 yards, I thought was a little disappointing. We dropped
Don't forget, his first one was 22 yards.
Right, right. Well, when you average 32, that's how you get there. You hit a clunker at 22, and then we had a fumbled punt, and so I was disappointed about that. But you take all of those things, and those are individually bad plays. But I'll tell you the two things that frustrated me about our special teams more than all of that. And that is, we have three running backs on our team right now. And so if you were to point out a weakness, that's going to be one of our weaknesses, that we have three running backs. And we know that two of them are freshmen, and so they at some point hit a wall, and Lacey is subject to being dinged up. And so what do you see? You see Yeldon out there on every special team unit. Punt coverage, punt return, kickoff coverage, kickoff return. Why is he out there in that situation? And then I'll one better you. Who's holding a PAT late in the game?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a 48-yard field goal to win a game, I will carry him out there to hold it. But
it's 41-10 at that point. That one point's not going to be a game breaker.
McCarron does not need to be holding for a PAT at that stage of the ball game. let them keep that point. We don't need it bad enough for him to be out there. That one point, it's like
we'll give you 2 points because we didn't
I'm not gonna in the subway bend over to pick up a nickel because I don't need a nickel that bad. We don't need that point that bad.
That was probably the worst. But the TJ Yeldon thing, you know, we saw that with Trent Richardson. I'm not justifying it, but we saw that with Trent Richardson his freshman year where, let's face it, he was the number two guy and we weren't comfortable with the depth behind him. And Saban has always been about sound tacklers and speed guys. And but you would think with all of the talent that we have on our roster now that there's someone else we could run out there besides TJ.
I would really like to think so, especially given, you know, apparent vulnerabilities at that, you know, at that position, the running back position.
I will just say real quick, you know how we've watched some of the videos of his press conferences where he's laid into people?
Yep.
I'd give $1 million for us to be able to be in the press room today and let you have asked him that question. That would have been freaking hilarious.
Well, I might need hazard pay for that.
That would have been absolutely hilarious. All right, who's your game ball and special teams? Just go ahead. Let's just both give it to Landon Collins.
Yeah, I think, done with it. You know, Landon Collins, and then we're done with that.
Okay. What do you think about the next opponent here? What do you think about the 7 o'clock kickoff time for the Tennessee game?
No, I like the primetime game on ESPN. I'll tell you what, this is a game that some fans, it'll be easy to, you know, dismiss. You know, we're a high caliber team. Clicking on all cylinders. Tennessee is down. Lost to Mississippi State. We should be able to beat them pretty good.
They have no defense, man.
Well, and that's fair. But on offense, they match up in a way that potentially could be dangerous. You know, they've got two very talented wide receivers, and we're kind of down on special teams right now. But Kadarius Patterson has returned quite a number of kicks, punts, and kickoffs, 4 touchdowns. He took one out of the end zone just the other day. We talked about our guys doing that. He did that. And took it the distance for a touchdown. He runs. We've seen him do this against a couple teams. He'll run the end around or the reverse, and so it's just the kind of play to get us moving the wrong way. And he can get the corner. He has the speed to take advantage. Tyler Bray may be the best quarterback that we have faced so far. I think he's if we're patient. I think he's prone to giving us the ball, but he could be dangerous down the field with Cordero and Justin Hunter.
Well, you know, given the injuries that has happened to our opponents, Tyler Bray is probably the best we have faced so far. And you know, to talk about the their passing game for a second, you know, Amari Cooper is sitting there at 43 yards a game, leading our stat sheet. Well, guess what? He wouldn't even be he'd be number 5 on their team because they got 4 guys who have caught more yards per game than our leading receiver.
Yep.
And also, too, to your point, I'm pretty impressed with their offensive line. I mean, their offensive line seems to be gelling very well, and they seem to be keeping guys off of him. And we have not shown the ability to get the pressure with 4 guys like I would like. So I do think we're going to see more blitzes this week.
What kind of margin do you see on the game?
You know, I see Tennessee scoring more points against us than anybody else has up until this point, which is not saying a lot. But I could see them putting 20 points on us.
Okay.
And I could see us, you know, probably matching somewhat what we have done in games past here. And so I'm going to call for a little closer game. And but I guess this is much closer. I think this might be the closest margin we've had all year. I'm calling for like a 31-20 game, Bama.
Oh, wow. Okay, so an 11-pointer. Now, we're averaging a margin of 33, and our closest has been 19. So you're cutting that down to 11. I see maybe a 38-17, maybe a 38-20. I see them maybe, you know, 38-20 is you know, two touchdowns, two field goals. So that's four possessions in which they score. But I think they have the potential to get yards in chunks, which, you know, certainly lends itself to at least having the opportunity to kick some field goals. I think that it's maybe it's a little probably tighter at half than we want it to be. And then I think we pull away in the second half. I think it's that kind of, you know, we'll be, you know, frustrated and, you know, pouring a stiff drink at halftime. And then hopefully things will settle down and we'll kind of pull away from them in the second half.
Well, I will say real quick that I think Vinny has not had to play in the back of the defense. I think we'll see him involved in going after the quarterback. Haha has been a little late to some balls that he should have got to. I think Haha is still trying to pick up the schemes. And so I think we really need to have a big game from Lester. Because, you know, Milner and Ballou are not going to be enough. We're going to have somebody else in the back of that defense step up. And so I think this might be the most pressure that Haha has had on him all season.
It could very well be, and that's a good point. And I think I read today that their lead-in rusher is likely out of the game. And so that has me thinking we may see Vinny down in the box a little bit more, playing a dime. But with Vinny down in the box, and so it'll give a nickel look with him a nickel look at him kind of at a linebacker position, but because he's a DB, it'll be a dime, you know, maybe that type of look. That's what I see. I think it's a good matchup.
Oh, it is a good matchup. And, you know, we've got some interesting opponents ahead real quick. I mean, the way Mississippi State's playing and, you know, the way LSU got it off the mat, you know, this is, I would say that right now, these next four games, because LSU, you know, is going to be a night game sure. At their place. Lucky us. I think this next four games really says a lot for this team. I mean, sure. The stretch of Tennessee, Mississippi State, LSU, and Texas A&M, that's a tough stretch.
Yeah, and A&M, they're kind of in the catbird seat at the end of that row. It's too early to spend a lot of time thinking about them, but they're a wild card in what they can do. They may struggle on defense. They get, you know, a month to bolt that down, but they certainly, with Gunny football, are putting up some points.
No, absolutely. Well, hey, man, I enjoyed it.
Well, hey, I want to do something just a little bit different, and so hopefully this doesn't get too clunky, but I want to just do a shout-out to we've gotten some comments, some people interacting with us, and so I just want to celebrate that for a minute. Jordan emailed a great ESPN article. I would have put a link to it, except for it's behind their paywall, so I can't do that, but it was a nice article, and he was talking some football, and so he's a fan of ours, and we certainly appreciate that. We got a 5-star rating from Rob this last week, and just some of his comments, easy to listen to and follow, players highlighted and called to task for good and bad plays, a little humor mixed in, so I think he was pointing that to me. And he called us not your typical sports podcast, and that we're holding his attention. So we appreciate that, Rob. And then I want to do one last. We got touched on Facebook as well, so people are hitting us all over the place, which we really love. And Tom, I'm going to pitch this question to you from Simon: who wins the East?
Florida. I would have said South Carolina going into this game against LSU. I was really just dumbfounded at the way LSU was able to manhandle South Carolina's front, even Clowney. Clowney, it showed me that in the Georgia game, they got popped in the mouth so quickly that they had to go to passing so much that the way to beat South Carolina is running the football. And we know LSU doesn't have a quarterback. But they got a shitload of running backs. LSU manhandled them and owned the line of scrimmage. And so Florida is playing that physical football that he learned under Saban.
Yep.
And I think Florida's going to take it to him.
Yeah, I almost don't trust my own opinion on who's going to win the East because, you know, before the season I said it's Georgia, then clearly it's South Carolina, and now clearly it seems that it's Florida. And so I've kind of gone around the basis on who I think will win it. Every week we learn a little bit more about the teams, and of course I guess it goes without saying that it comes down to South Carolina and Florida this week. one thing that kind of strikes a chord with me is that this is three consecutive weeks that South Carolina, you know, it's a good time to be a South Carolina fan, I guess. It's three consecutive weeks in a row where they have really been, we're Alabama fans, our game's always the most important. But from a national perspective, they've been the game of the week 3 weeks in a row.
Well, man, it's a very tough road. I mean, you know, for them to be on a high like they were against Georgia and then have to go to at LSU and then at Florida, and even in that LSU game real quick, they still could have won that ball game. I mean, that pick that was thrown by Connor Shaw late in that game was very uncharacteristic of him. I mean, you never throw across your body like that in that situation. And so LSU's front still impresses me, more so their defensive line than their offensive line.
Sure.
But just the way that they were able to hold South Carolina to 30-something rushing yards, man, that definitely got my attention.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, a couple of things really jumped out in the LSU performance. You know, we get them at night, you know, at home just like that. And so we'll walk into that buzzsaw. It'll be interesting to see what South Carolina rebounds with. It's one of those situations. They were on that high from that Georgia game. And so you act like you've been there before. Sometimes you have to have been there to know how to act. And in that situation, you know, kind of everyone's darling, they didn't know how to necessarily act in that situation, and they gave up that game. And so can they regroup against Florida? Everything that they want to accomplish is still available to them. And so how do they go into the swamp, which, you know, I guess I let that be the deciding factor that Florida will win at home. If it were in South Carolina, I might give them the nod.
Okay. Well, I definitely think at this point it'll be a good game, but I think Florida's going to pull it out.
Yeah, I think so too, and so I'm looking forward to watching that. That's the CBS game Saturday afternoon, so I look forward to watching that game and then rolling just right into the Bama game in the evening. So should be another fun Saturday of football.
Absolutely, man. Well, I definitely enjoyed it and look forward to doing it again soon.
Absolutely. Simon, Jordan, Rob, thanks for your comments hitting us in different media outlets. I'll post links so those of you out there can follow suit and give us some comments as questions as well. We'll do our best to accommodate them. But this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the tide. Got that, coach?
Aye.
Of course, roll tide.